How old am I? I'm 101, will be in March.
Stella, and I'm 95, and I'm, what else was I supposed to say? I forgot.
You're getting old.
Huh?
You're 95 and getting old.
Yeah, I'm getting old. I just turned 17, and 3 days later, we were married. June 10th, it'd be 79 years.
Yeah, she was a cute chick back then.
We don't look like that today, but that was us.
When I was in the nursing home, that was the worst experience I ever had. And she said, you're not going back in a nursing home.
I got him home. Take care of him.
And she still takes care of me.
And I do a little bit of cooking and stuff, and I see that he gets good food, because that's what he likes, and gets what he wants, and it works. There's some things I can do, and some things I can't do. Snow blowing and taking out the garbage. That's where Sam comes in.
Sam, he's there when you need him.
Always. He is a great kid.
My family's been helping people out in the neighborhood for about 10 to 12 years. They insist on paying, and I'm like, no. I pretty much always lose those fights. I have no choice anymore. Sometimes I'll skip out and just not ring the doorbell so they don't pay me, and then they'll end up calling and I'll be in trouble.
One granddaughter does the grocery shopping, and then I have another granddaughter that comes and does the laundry. I got a grandson that comes whenever I call, so I have a lot of good help. I'm happy, and he's happy, and when he's happy, I'm happy.
I'm happy when she's around.
Aww. Merle and Stella. Did you guys see where they were from? Rockford, Illinois. A little sidebar. That's a YouTube channel that I subscribe to called Our City, Our Story. And they publish these positive stories about the city of Rockford and cool things that are happening in our city, people who have done amazing things. I love it. Can I tell you something about Rockfordians? Since I'm a transplant, we tend to be very negative about our city. And we tend to focus on the bad stuff that happens in our city. And I don't want to have my head in the sand. There's bad stuff. But I love watching stories like this about good people that live in Rockford, Illinois. So I wanted to share that with you. 79 years, they've been married for 79 years as of March. For a very young person like myself, 79 years is kind of hard to even imagine. They've been married almost twice as long as I have been alive, which is a long time. Did you notice that little line in there where Merle went to the nursing home? And he said that was the worst experience of his life, so she brought him home, and she takes care of him, and you saw her putting his pills in the jar and making good food for her. I thought that was something. After all, Stella's only 95, so she certainly should be up to the task of taking care of him, right? She's got plenty of energy and vim and verve, I'm sure. It's a really cool story. And did you see the faithfulness that couple had for each other? I mean, it was evident from the first few lines of the video. They've got illnesses, aches and pains. You know, think about all the things that they have faced in their 101 and 95 years of life. And the way that they take care of each other is very evident. 101. Heidi, are you able to handle me at 101? I'm pretty grouchy now. Me at 101? Gracious. Oh, pray for Heidi. That's going to be a rough 60 years, right? I would really love to meet Merle and Stella someday. No kidding. On the video, there's a clip of their house and you can see their street number. And I almost thought, I wonder if I could figure out where that is, just to go and meet Merle and Stella. I think that we all need examples of people like that so that we can copy the things that they have done that have made them have a successful marriage for 79 years, right? I think we need to see what 80 years of faithfulness looks like so that we can do that. I don't have many examples of anything like that in my life, and I think we all could use things like that. How are you guys doing with the Believe series? Speaking of things that have lasted for 101 years. I'm teasing. We are on week 28 of 30. Let's all be honest with each other. Let's have confession time. How many of you guys are caught up with chapter 28? Not bad. A little weak in areas. Those of you who don't have your hands up, no problem. You've only got 2 weeks to go, and then you can catch up with us. So get to reading. We are almost done, and I have really enjoyed this series, especially the way it's laid out. The very first part of the series, we learned a lot about God. These are the things that you have to know about God in order to make it as a Christian. The second things are kind of answer the question, well, what do we do with that information? Because God is this way, these are the things that Christians believe. And this last third that we are in right now says, this is what our lives should look like because of all this stuff that came before. So it kind of builds on itself. So that's where we are right now. What does the life of a Christian look like? What do we have about us that's different? What characteristics are there inside of us that make people go, yes, that person is different than other people who don't follow Jesus? That's what we're talking about this last 10 weeks. The shorthand version is spiritual fruit. That's how the Bible calls it. It's kind of an interesting analogy. You think about a tree, and trees make fruit, right? If an apple tree doesn't make apples, it's not a very good tree, right? If an apple tree has a couple of scrawny, gross, withered apples that are sour, nobody's really impressed. Not a great tree, right? The Bible says we are kind of the same way. There are fruits that should be growing inside of us, and they should get bigger and bigger and bigger as time passes. Okay? If it doesn't, if you look at these characteristics that it calls fruits and say, I'm not really growing in that area, then you need to look at yourself and say, I might not believe the things that I think that I believe. Or maybe I'm not as convicted as I think I am. So spiritual fruits, that's what we're talking about. Today's spiritual fruit is faithfulness. Okay. Before I go on with the sermon, Central Christian Church was very faithful to the city of Rockford in this past week, by opening the doors up and letting about 1,300 people come through our doors for trunks and treats. I think that it was very good thing that we did. You all know that the candy total was 16,000 pieces of candy. Do you know how many we got? 20,000 pieces. You were in first service. No fair. Yeah, 20,000 pieces of candy were donated this year. So we went over our goal, which is an excellent thing to do. Lori Cruden, who's kind of in charge of Trunks and Treats every year, she goes to Sam's and buys her panic candy. Like the couple days before Trunks and Treats, she gets real nervous about whether or not she's going to have enough. So she fills up her trunk with stuff from Sam's. And this year, we got to take it all back and say we don't need it. So that was really good. You all were very generous in helping us to serve the city of Rockford. Did you guys know no dentist is paying us for hosting Trunks and Treats? I don't care a lick about candy at all. What I do care about is making sure that people feel like they are welcome at Central Christian Church. I feel like Trunks and Treats is an excellent, like, initial introduction to what it's like to live as a Christian and the fun that we can have and the difference that we want to make in our community. So thumbs up, church. I was very proud to be a part of Central this week. Back to Merle and Stella. I'm going to go back to them a couple times in this sermon. They're a great example of what it means to be faithful to our spouse, aren't they? But as impressive as that is, and I don't want to minimize what being married for 79 years is like, what the Bible talks about when it speaks about faithfulness is much, much bigger than Merle and Stella, okay? In our case, God is the ultimate example of faithfulness. It's interesting because when we talk about in the Christian walk about how important it is for us to be faithful, usually we think, well, it's important for us to be faithful to God, right? We are supposed to obey the things he asks us to do, do the things that we're supposed to, don't do the things we're not supposed to. But the Bible talks a lot about God's faithfulness to us, which seems somehow backwards from how we normally talk about faithfulness. I look at it as I'm supposed to be faithful to God. As his follower, these are the things that I do. This is how I act. This is the spiritual fruit that I have. But the Bible has tons of passages that talk about how faithful he is to us. I'm going to talk about a couple of examples that we get out of the Bible. And I'm going to have to skip lots of details or we're not going to make it to Applebee's. So you guys promised me you got to go back and read these passages for yourselves this week, okay? The first story is from the book of Genesis. Abraham is an incredible example of a person that's being faithful to God. But God was also very, very faithful to Abraham. God made a promise to Abraham, and it was a very, very important promise. He told him that he would bless all nations through his children. Okay? Seems okay on the surface, but you have to realize that Abraham and Sarah had never had any kids, and Abraham and Sarah were well past the age of having kids when God gave them that promise. So I don't want to put words in Abraham's mouth, but I wonder if as he's given that promise, he thinks, well, how on earth is that going to happen, right? When they were past the age to have children, it would be a tough promise to believe. How is this going to take place? But sure enough, when Abraham was 100 years old, his wife Sarah had a baby. When Abraham was Merle's age, his wife Sarah had a baby. I don't know how that works. Merle doesn't seem like he's up and at him and ready to take care of a baby, but God gave them a baby, okay? But you got to remember, like Abraham and Sarah, they wanted to have children, but God's promise was not, I promise I'm going to make you happy by giving you a child. It was bigger than that. He said, I promise that I'm going to bless every nation in the world through your child. Well, that's a much bigger promise, isn't it? That's much bigger than just Abraham and Sarah. That's everybody, right? And so if you fast forward through history and look at Jesus, the Bible records his genealogy, like how we got from the beginning of the world until Jesus' arrival. And did you know that Abraham is in that genealogy? God blessed all the nations in the world through Abraham's children. Now, here's the question. Did Abraham get to see with his eyes what that ultimate blessing would be? No. It was thousands of years later before that ever took place. And I don't know if Abraham ever looked at baby Isaac and thought, man, this kid is great, but I don't think he's blessing the whole world, right? I don't really understand how it is that God is going to answer or fulfill that promise that he gave to me. Isaac's great, but Isaac's Isaac. How on earth is he going to bless all nations? You know, sometimes God's promises take generations to fulfill. But that doesn't mean he's not faithful, does it? I think it just means that God's calendar and my calendar aren't even close to the same thing. The way that God looks at time and the way I look at time aren't even on the same page, right? Psalm 36 says this about God's faithfulness, and I love these two verses. He says, "Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies. Your righteousness is like the highest mountains, your justice like the great deep. You, Lord, preserve both people and animals." I love that last line. It's so different. Lord, you preserve both people and animals. The author of this psalm says that God's faithfulness reaches all the way up to the skies. And he acknowledges that people and animals are kept safe by God. He's what made it all happen, and he's what protects all of us. I sat in my office for a while, and I brainstormed. Very dangerous thing to happen. I sat in my office and I thought, what are the things that happen in the world just to keep me alive that I have zero control of? The first thing I thought as I was sitting there is my heartbeat. It's beating like a drum, has ever since I was inside my mom, right? And I have zero control over it. I can't make it stop. I can't make it go faster or slower. Nothing I can do has anything to do with my heartbeat. But it still keeps happening, doesn't it? And I have no control over that. The Earth is orbiting the sun, right? The Earth is spinning on its axis as we go around the sun so that we can have seasons and day and night and all these things that we take for granted. How much control do any of us have over any of that? Zero. Even if we change the clocks back, it doesn't mean that anything changed with the planets. Did you guys know that? God gave me white blood cells that run around all over my body and kill every pathogen that I get when we all shake hands with each other every day after church, right? I have an immune system that protects my body from all of that stuff. Do I have any control over any of that stuff? I don't even get it, but it happens anyway to protect me from stuff. How about the tides in the ocean? Can I control the moon and make it go a little bit faster so we can have more of a high tide or less of a low tide? Nope, can't do anything with that. The water cycle. Franny came home the other day and she had studied the water cycle at school. Water goes into the ocean, it evaporates, it makes clouds, it rains on my backyard so that we can have flowers and tomatoes. How much control do I have over the water cycle? Zero. And every single one of these things are absolutely essential to keep us alive. And we don't control any of it. I probably need to stop watching documentaries, but I really thought about this stuff. Like, this, God put this stuff in motion so that I could be alive, so that you could be alive. And I have zero control over it. And I really believe that He shows Himself faithful, that that stuff happens day after day after day, and I don't do nothing for it. He shows that He is faithful, that like what Psalm says, that He preserves people because all of that stuff happens and I have no control over it. I don't know, I got kind of lost in my office as I was thinking about all that stuff, and I just was amazed that all of that stuff was set into motion by God and I have no control over it whatsoever. And that is just the physical ways that God shows His faithfulness. There's so many more, the spiritual ways that He shows His faithfulness. I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll cover that later. I'm going to give you another example of faithfulness that we find in the Bible. Joseph. I'm stealing this illustration from my wife, Heidi. I overheard her talking about this, and it struck me, so I wanted to share it with you. Joseph has a great story. You read it in Genesis 37. Write that down, because you're all going to read that this week. Because I'm going to summarize a whole bunch of his life in just a few minutes, and you really got to dig into the details to get the whole story. Everybody promise you'll read it this week? Got it? Okay. Joseph was one of 12 brothers, and he had the gift to interpret dreams. God gave him the ability to hear a person's dream and go, oh, here's what this means. That ability got him into trouble once when he himself had a dream, and the interpretation was, hey, guess what, brothers? All of you plus mom and dad are going to bow down to me someday. Isn't that a great dream? And there's a bit of sibling rivalry in this family, so that didn't go over well. That was not a good dream for Joseph to have. And Joseph's dad kind of favored him, which gets families into trouble. My kids accuse me of favoring Francesca, and it's not true. Okay? Right, kids? Yeah. So it always gets families into trouble when there's a favorite. So Joseph was kind of the favorite. One day, Joseph and his brothers are out in the fields, and they decide they can't take any more of his arrogance. So they dump Joseph into a well. And then they make up an elaborate scheme where they're going to put blood all over his coat and send it back home to dad and say, oh my goodness, a wild animal got Joseph, isn't that terrible? But then they said, no, let's not pretend like he's dead. Let's sell him as a slave. What is going on in this family? Like, that is terrible. My kids, they fight, but gracious, slavery has never been on the table in my family, right? Like, this is horrible, terrible things that are happening in the family, in Joseph's family. But sure enough, caravan of slave traders comes along, and they're like, cha-ching, they sell Joseph, and off he goes to Egypt as a slave, where he is sold to Potiphar, okay? Potiphar was one of Pharaoh's officials, so he was really important. Joseph served his master well, and that's really key. Joseph served his master well, and God blessed him. And the Bible says that Joseph was faithful to God when he was a slave. But, and this is really interesting. God said that because Joseph was faithful, he blessed Joseph, and Potiphar was blessed because of that. So tell me, what kind of employees do you think we should be? I think there's a statement there. Potiphar's wife comes along and falsely accuses Joseph of sexual immorality, right? When actually the opposite was true. It was her going after him. So Potiphar comes home, puts Joseph in jail. Okay, he's not going to put up with that anymore. When in prison, I got to keep going. When in prison, Joseph runs into two guys, and they have a dream that they would like him to interpret. So what does Joseph do? But he interprets their dream. When they get out of prison, they tell Joseph, we promise we are going to get you out of here. We're going to go talk to Pharaoh right now. And they forgot. And Joseph remained in prison for 2.5 more years. And do you know what it said? Joseph was faithful to God for the 2.5 years that he was in prison, and God blessed him. Until Pharaoh had a dream. Now the number one in charge has a dream. And they go, oh, we know a guy. So they go clean up Joseph. He comes up and interprets the dream. And he says, Pharaoh, you got to get ready because there's going to be 7 good years followed by 7 famine years. Okay? So you're going to need to take advantage of these 7 good years and store grain away so that we can all survive 7 bad years. And Pharaoh says, great idea. You're in charge. Okay? So Joseph went from prisoner, forgotten, to number one in all of Egypt in the span of 24 hours. Okay? I'm summarizing a whole lot in a very fast amount of time. Are we all together? Okay? Here's the question. Do you think Joseph, in chains, having just been sold by his brothers, on his way to Egypt, do you think he was able to say, I know exactly how God's going to get me out of this mess? Nope. Do you think that Joseph, when he was forgotten in prison for 2.5 years, he was able to confidently say, oh, God's got this. I know just what he's going to do. Nope. Do you think that when Joseph is falsely accused of doing things with Potiphar's wife, do you think he was like, oh, God will take care of all this. No big deal. Nope. Joseph stayed faithful to God, even though he had no idea. I mean, honestly, the story seems to keep getting worse. Like, it'll get better for a little bit, and then he's in prison. Better for a little bit, he's in a well, right? I don't think Joseph ever had an idea of how God was going to work it out. But it said he stayed faithful to him at every turn. I know that I've told you this story before, but you're going to have to put up with me a little bit. There's a guy that I knew named Ali. He was a guy that I met when we lived in Ancona, Italy. And Ali was a brand new baby Christian. He became a Christian in Afghanistan. And becoming a Christian in Afghanistan meant the Taliban wanted you dead. So the Taliban threatened him, he threatened his family, he threatened his friends. And the only thing that Ali could do to survive was to leave Afghanistan. And I remember thinking, like, this dude has been a Christian for a couple months, and still he's able to stay faithful to God despite his life being in danger. Ali told me about how they escaped from Afghanistan and how he held on to the underneath of a flatbed truck as they're headed for the border of Afghanistan. And he knew that people who have tried this before were killed when they got caught. And he stayed faithful to God the whole time. And I look at a faith like that, and I have to be honest, do I have that kind of faith? I don't know. I've never had to face anything like that before. I mean, I want to say yes, but do I really know until I'm holding on to the underside of a truck, hoping the Taliban doesn't find me? I'm not sure I can. I think following Jesus has been pretty easy for me. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not always easy, but the Taliban isn't after me. I've never had someone want to sell me as a slave. I've never been in prison. Do you have that kind of faith? I bet it's being tested in different ways, right? Nobody's waiting outside for us to leave this building and arrest us because we're following Jesus. But I bet your faith is being tested in other ways besides those things. And I think that when that time comes, when we're not quite sure how God is going to work this all out, we have to look to examples like Joseph and Ali and do the things that they do, right? They did. And I think we have to remember that God answers these things on a very different timeline than us. And the way that he chooses to answer it is going to be probably guaranteed to be far different from the way that we would have answered the question or the issue that we're facing. No one in this room is in danger of being sold into slavery or wondering if on their 100th birthday they're going to have a baby. But I know that there are people in this room that are wondering, can I stay faithful when the future's uncertain, when you're waiting for the doctor to call back, when things are a mess at your family, all the different things, when the checkbook is at negative 10? When you're looking ahead and you're thinking, I don't really know how God is going to pull through all of this, when that moment comes, I think that we look to God's word as our ultimate example and remember that God is incredibly faithful to us. We can trust him when he asked us to cast our cares on him. Do you remember that from the Bible? We trust him when he promises that he will protect us. When he says he will forgive us, when we confess our sin, then we take it to the bank and know that he will forgive us. When he says that nothing in the world will ever be able to separate us from his love, he means it. And that faithfulness that he has towards us is what we are supposed to copy. That's our ultimate example of faithfulness. It's definitely true that we remain faithful to God, but as Christians, I think that we're supposed to remain faithful to each other as well. We've got Merle and Stella, right? They're the example of a couple that stayed faithful through lots and lots of stuff. The faithfulness of a married couple almost goes without saying. It's kind of the first thing that you think of when we talk about faithfulness, right? Well, yeah, husband and wife are to remain faithful to each other. Those of us who are married made a promise to one other person that we are there with you from now till the day we die. But that means that our relationships with other people outside of the marriage relationship have to change, right? It means that I personally don't have lots of female friends outside of the context of Heidi. Because Heidi is, that's who I'm faithful to, right? I show my faithfulness to Heidi in all kinds of different ways. But what about other relationships that we have? We're not all spouses. And we also play other roles, even if we are spouses. How do we prove ourselves faithful to our kids? I think that we keep our promises. We do the things that we tell them we're going to do. I think that's one way that we show our faithfulness to them. I think we show our kids that we're faithful when we're consistent in our discipline. Like we do the things that, we discipline them in the ways that we say we're going to discipline them. I think we're faithful when we raise our kids to know God. I think we're faithful to them when we raise them the way the Bible teaches us to raise our kids. I think we're faithful to them when we demonstrate our faithfulness to Jesus. We say, hey, kids, copy us. We're following Jesus and want you to do the same thing. Allowing the Bible to show us how to raise our kids is a way for us to stay faithful to them. I'm a spouse, I'm a dad, and I'm an employee, which makes sense because not just everybody gets to come up here and talk, right? I am an employee. How do I show my faithfulness to my boss? Ooh, who wants to talk about that, right? Faithfulness to our bosses. Think about all the commands that we have in the Bible that tell us how we're supposed to be, okay? Do you think any of those could be applicable to how we're supposed to be with our boss? Bible tells us not to steal. Do you think your boss would like you to not steal? Yes, that's an easy one, right? How about this? Paul said, ooh, I don't like this verse. Do everything without complaining or arguing. Do you think maybe that our boss would appreciate it if he asked us to do something and we didn't complain or argue with him? I had to apologize to Sherman first service, right? Do everything without complaining or arguing. Does it say do the things that are reasonable without complaining or arguing? Does it say if your boss is nice, do those things without complaining or arguing? What does it say? Do everything without complaining or arguing. Whew, let's keep going. I don't want to talk about that anymore, right? No, I really do think that the Bible teaches us how to act as employees, how we can be faithful employees. I am also a son. I am faithful to my mom when I call her once a week and let her know what the kids are doing. I am really faithful to my mom when I call her on her landline because she needs me to help her with her smartphone. It is the most trying time in my week. When Mom, I love her, but I wish she never would have got a smartphone. Because that is some difficult conversations as I try with my phone describing colors and not words because she doesn't understand the lingo. And, oh, I love you, Mom, but that's tough, okay? I show faithfulness to my mom when I respect the things that she thinks and when I fly her up for Christmas and that kind of thing. I'm also a friend. I show that I am a faithful friend when I am dependable, when a friend needs me, or when a friend wants to hang out, or when a friend needs to talk. I'm highlighting these different areas, and I know that there's a ton more that we could talk about, because I think it is so important for our faith to impact all those different areas. It is far too tempting. It's way too easy for us to show, to be faithful to only the people in this room. Oh my word, that's easy, right? It is really easy to look like a faithful person when you're sitting in your small group, right? That's easy. It is far, far harder to be faithful when your boss is a jerk. It is far harder to be a good friend when you're tired and want to go to bed. It is far harder to be respectful to your mom and dad for years and years and years. It's far harder to stay faithful to your kids. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, if our faith just changes who we are in this room, it's almost worthless. Our faith has to get in and change us in every area of our lives. We have to be shown faithful in the eyes of a world who doesn't believe a single thing that we believe. We have to show them with our actions that we are different, that we are a faithful people. That's where it really counts. And I really want to be faithful in all those other fruits of the Spirit in every sphere that I go into so that I can represent Jesus the best way that I can. If your faith only changes this hour and a half in your week, then it is almost worthless, and you need to figure out what went wrong. So how about you guys? How do you need to grow in your faithfulness? I think the first is by recognizing God's faithfulness to us and the promises that He has made to us. I think we need to look to God as our ultimate example of this is what faithfulness looks like. Maybe we all need to go watch some documentaries and find out the things that God has done and put into motion for us to be alive. Maybe we need to read the Psalms and look at the way, like the analogies that David uses in a lot of the Psalms when he talks about what God's faithfulness looks like. It goes all the way up to the skies. The second is that we need to grow in our faithfulness to others. We need to prove that we are trustworthy, that people can count on us, that we will be there. And our prayer needs to be that our faithfulness will reflect God's. So how are you doing? Are you growing in those two areas? Are you able to take tough situations that you're facing and know God is going to take care of you? Maybe not in the way you thought He was. maybe not on the timeline you thought he was going to get you out of that situation, but are you able to trust that God will take care of you? Jesus, in a passage that dealt with worry, he told everybody to look at the grass and the birds and the lilies. He said, look at the grass. Like, grass is here today and gone tomorrow, right? All of our yards are dying right now. Grass is here today, gone tomorrow, and God takes care of the grass. Don't you think he's going to take care of you too? I love that illustration because, yeah, the grass is all dead. And it doesn't seem terribly worried about it. But God says, hey, you are worth much more than grass and birds and lilies. So don't you? Isn't it logical that God would take care of you too? His conclusions is that since God takes care of good care of all those things, then isn't he also going to take care of us? Of course he is. We're about to sing a song. I know you guys know it. It's called Oceans. And it's a song that has lots of echoes. It talks about being called out onto the water, which is sort of an echo of the time that Peter was in a boat and Jesus was walking on water and Jesus asked Peter to come join him. You guys remember that story? Peter was faithful to Jesus when he lifted his leg over the boat and stepped out, right? And I really believe that God is giving us opportunities to do the same thing all the time. I think that our faith needs to be tested. I think that we have to get out of the boat sometimes and see if we really do trust God, if we really do believe that he's going to be faithful to us. So as we sing this song, picture that in your mind. What is it that you need to be better at trusting God about? What is the obstacle? What is the struggle? What is the challenge that you're facing? And then just like the song we're about to sing says, what does it mean to get out of the boat and trust that God will be faithful to us? I'm going to pray, and then we're going to stand and we're going to sing. Father, I thank you for your call in our lives to trust you. It is a decision we have to make, and I don't think it always comes very naturally. I know that there are people in this room that are struggling with, can I trust? Can I believe that you are faithful? And help us to grow in that way. Help us to be better at it than we were yesterday. God, help us to grow in this spiritual fruit of being faithful. Thank you for the ultimate example, your ultimate example of faithfulness. I pray these things in your son's name. Amen. There may be somebody in this room that has yet to even take the very first step towards following Jesus. If that's you, today is an incredible day for you to start. If you want to start following Jesus today, come talk to me after the service. I'll be down here right in front. I would love to explain to you what it's like to follow Jesus day after day. If you are facing an obstacle that you are struggling with staying faithful to God, if you are at that point where you're not sure if your faith is going to hold you up, then I would love to come and talk to you and pray with you and encourage you that God has got it and he's got it under control. Please stand with me.